Have you ever been to a 3D movie? We went to see one last summer at Disneyland. It looked like objects were flying right at us. They even had a special effect that made it feel like something was crawling up our legs. But of course, the key to experiencing a 3D movie properly is you have to wear the right glasses. If you don't wear those funky paper glasses they give you before the movie, the ones with the one red eyeglass and one blue eyeglass, everything looks wrong and you can't even figure out what's going on in the movie. The same holds true when we approach the Bible. If we want to see correctly what it is saying, we have to be wearing the right spectacles. For instance, in order to understand Matthew 15, 29 through 39, which we're going to read this morning, we have to put on the spectacles of a first century Jew. In order to see the difference between wearing the proper spectacles and not wearing them, let me first read to you from Matthew 15. Then we'll put on our spectacles and look at it again. Hear the word of God from Matthew 15, beginning with verse 29. Jesus left there and went along the Sea of Galilee. Then he went up on a mountainside and sat down. Great crowds came to him, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at his feet, and he healed them. The people were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled made well, the lame walking, and the blind seeing, and they praised the God of Israel. Jesus called his disciples to him and said, I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me 3 days and have nothing to eat. I do not want to send them away hungry, or they may collapse on the way. His disciples answered, Where could we get enough bread in this remote place to feed such a crowd? How many loaves do you have? Jesus asked. Seven, they replied, and a few small fish. He told the crowd to sit down on the ground. Then he took the seven loaves and the fish, and when he had given thanks, he broke them and gave them to the disciples, and they in turn to the people. They all ate and were satisfied. Afterward, the disciples picked up seven basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. The number of those who ate was 4,000, besides women and children. After Jesus had sent the crowd away, he got into the boat and went to the vicinity of Magadan. The first thing we see when we put on our first century Jewish glasses is the when and the where of these events. And the where and the when revealed to whom Jesus was ministering. Some scholars think that the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000 are two different accounts of the same event. I don't think so. The details in each story are too different. First of all, the time of year is different. Mark, whom Matthew is following in his account, tells us that the 5,000 sat down on the green grass, so it was springtime. In this account, Jesus has the people sit on the ground. In other words, it's high summer. The grass has withered away and the heat leaving only the bare, hard earth. Perhaps as much as 6 months have passed. It would have taken Jesus that long to travel with his disciples from the western side of the Sea of Galilee, at the beginning of Matthew 15, up to the region of Tyre and Sidon, where he meets the Canaanite woman in the middle of Matthew 15 and spends some time, then down again to the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee and the Decapolis here at the end of Matthew 15. But secondly, and most importantly, the setting and the people served are different in these two accounts. 5,000 Jews were fed by Jesus near Bethsaida, according to Luke 9. Bethsaida was a Semitic town. However, in Mark 8, we read that after sojourning in the region of Tyre and Sidon, Jesus went down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of the Decapolis. Decapolis is a Greek word meaning 10 cities. This was a largely Gentile area, mostly on the eastern side of the Sea of Galilee. Thus, throughout Matthew 15, we see Matthew emphasizing Jesus' ministry to Gentiles. At the beginning of Matthew 15, we saw Jesus overruling the Jewish dietary laws, basically declaring all foods clean. In the middle of Matthew 15, we saw Jesus reaching out to a Gentile woman and healing her daughter. And now here we see Jesus healing people in the Decapolis and feeding 4,000 mostly Gentile people in a non-Semitic region. There are other details in Matthew's text which indicate that Jesus is ministering to Gentiles. In verse 31, we read that they praised the God of Israel. This wouldn't have been spelled out this way if it was a Jewish crowd praising their own God. Also, in the feeding of the 5,000, the baskets used to pick up the leftover pieces are called kophinoi. According to William Barclay, the kophinos was a narrow-necked flask-shaped basket which Jews often carried with them. For a Jew often carried his own food, lest he should be compelled to eat food which had been touched by Gentile hands and was therefore unclean. However, in the feeding of the 4,000, the baskets used are called sphirides. Barclay says, the sphirus was much more like a hamper. It could be big enough to carry a man. It was a kind of basket that a Gentile would use. In fact, this was the kind of basket the disciples used when they lowered Saul through an opening in the wall of the city of Damascus, one of the 10 cities of the Decapolis. Barclay concludes, the wonder of this story is that in these healings and in this feeding of the hungry, we see the mercy and the compassion of Jesus going out to the Gentiles. Here is a kind of symbol and foretaste that the bread of God was not to be confined to the Jews, that the Gentiles were also to have their share of Him who is the living bread. Second thing we see clearly when we put on our first century Jewish spectacles is why Matthew here tells us about even more healings. Matthew tells us that great crowds came to Jesus, bringing the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, and many others, and laid them at His feet, and He healed them. The people were amazed when they saw the mute speaking, the crippled made well, the lame walking, and the blind seeing. Why does Matthew lengthen an already long book to tell us about even more of Jesus' healings? Matthew expects that his readers will carry in their minds the same prophetic texts from the Hebrew Scriptures which he carried in his mind. In telling of Jesus healing the lame, the blind, the crippled, and the mute, Matthew is echoing Isaiah 35 verses 5 and 6, where we read this, then the eyes of the blind shall be opened, and the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then the lame shall leap like a deer, and the tongue of the speechless sing for joy. As Tom Wright points out, this text is part of a passage where God promises that the people of Israel will be brought back from exile, coming safely through the wilderness to arrive at their home. Matthew is underlining his belief that the long-awaited time is now at last coming to pass. The healings are not just signs of special, though peculiar, power. They are signs, three-dimensional signs, if you like, of the fact that Jesus is fulfilling the old prophecies. Here, finally, is what Israel had been waiting for all along. The important thing for Matthew, here as elsewhere, is that this takes place on a mountain. Matthew makes many references in his gospel to another set of spectacles, which enable his readers to see what is going on in three dimensions. The Zion traditions, Old Testament prophecies in which Jerusalem, Zion, would become the great mountain to which all the nations would flock to be saved. Only now it isn't Jerusalem to which everyone flocks, but Jesus Himself. And He provides a feast for everyone who comes. Remember in our story last week where the Canaanite woman said to Jesus, "Yes, Lord, but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Here we see just that, the little puppies, the Gentiles, feasting at the Master's table and being healed by the Master. And this points forward to the final mountain scene at the end of Matthew's Gospel, when Jesus sends out His followers to make disciples of all nations. Now let's talk about two things in this passage we don't need first century Jewish spectacles to understand. First of all, Michael Green has written, why were the disciples so perplexed about what Jesus would do when faced with this hungry throng in the wilderness? They had, after all, seen Him feed 5,000 people from a few bread rolls. Their obtuseness accords well enough with what we know of them at this time. But is it not very natural? Is it not like us? We see some marvelous display of the Lord's power, and yet we are full of doubts when we are thrown into another situation of need that casts us back on Him. We simply do not expect Him to act the second time. They were like that, it seems, and it may be that they did indeed remember the feeding of the 5,000, but they also remembered occasions when they were in real need and those needs remained unmet. And so their faith burned low. And expectancy shrunk. Is it not so with us? Lack of trust often springs from forgetfulness of past blessing. Secondly, in this passage, we see Jesus meeting every kind of human need. We see Him healing people with all kinds of physical problems, the lame, the blind, the crippled, the mute, many others. Many people ask, if there's a loving God who created the world, then why is there so much pain and suffering? In some ways, this is a difficult, if not impossible, question to answer theoretically. But practically speaking, God Himself has answered this question through His Son, Jesus Christ. In Jesus, we see just how much God does care about the pain of the world and of the individuals in the world. He cares infinitely. We also see Jesus concerned for the tired. He says, I have compassion for these people. They've already been with me 3 days. The word for compassion used here means that Jesus was moved in His bowels. We think of the heart as the seat of compassion. Thus we use hearts to decorate our Valentine's cards. The Jews thought of the bowels as the seat of compassion. It wouldn't work too well on a Valentine's card, but that's how the Jews thought. Jesus was moved at gut level by the tiredness of the people who had come out to hear and see Him teach and preach and heal. As William Barclay has said, Jesus is infinitely concerned for the world's wayfarers, for the world's toilers, for those whose eyes are weary and whose hands are tired. And finally, we see Jesus feeding the hungry. Jesus is just as concerned about men's bodies as He is about their souls. Alfred Edersheim has pointed out in regard to this passage that at each of 3 successive stages of His ministry, Jesus ends each stage by setting a meal before people. First, the feeding of the 5,000 comes at the end of His ministry in Galilee. After this event, Jesus doesn't preach or heal in Galilee again. Second, there is the feeding of the 4,000. This comes at the end of Jesus' brief ministry to the Gentiles, first in the region of Tyre and Sidon and now in the Decapolis. Thirdly and finally, there is the Passover supper which Jesus shares with His disciples on the eve of His own death. Jesus always leaves us with strengthening food for the journey. He is always gathering people to Himself to feed us with the living bread. He's always giving of Himself completely before He moves on. Matthew's church, to whom Matthew is writing, could not have heard the stories of the feeding of the 5,000 and the feeding of the 4,000 without thinking of how Jesus feeds us through the bread and wine of the Lord's Supper. Jesus still comes to us, offering us the bread which will satisfy the eternal hunger of the human soul. He gives us food and strength for the journey. He meets every kind of human need. The question is, are we continuing to do the same kind of work in His name? How can we bring the work of Jesus into 3D in our world today? Where in the world are the promises of God urgently needed to be heard today? Where are the lame, the blind, the crippled, and the mute needing a touch from Jesus today? Where are the tired needing a lift from Him today? Where are those who are hungry needing Jesus to feed them today? I remember a story told many years ago of an Italian village with a beautiful statue of Jesus in the town square. The statue showed Jesus standing with hands lovingly outstretched to every passerby. Sadly, the statue was damaged during the Second World War and lost its hands. After the war, the leaders of the Italian village where this statue stood considered what needed to be done to fix it. In the end, they decided to leave the statue as it was, and they put a sign beneath it, putting these words on the lips of Jesus, I have no hands but yours. These words echo those of St. Teresa of Avila, who once wrote, Christ has no body now on earth but yours, no hands but yours, no feet but yours. Yours are the eyes through which Christ's compassion looks out into the world. Yours are the feet with which He is to go about doing good. Yours are the hands with which He is to bless now.